We spoke last night, those who were here in the Shir, some about this idea of the 42 travels that Bnei Yisrael went to in the desert. I'd like to take another track with this right now. There's a pasuk in Yechezkel, Perkav Vav Pasuk Lamed Hey, which says, Vehevesi Eschem El Midbar Ha'amim. There's different opinions in the Mefarshim. Are we talking past tense, going back in history, present tense, future tense? Many do say it's speaking future tense, and it's speaking about the galus that we have been going through. Since the Churban Bayis Sheni, since the destruction of the Second Temple, Hashem says, I will take you to the desert of the nations. Now, why are the nations a desert? Right? Jews live among many different nations. They're not desert. I was just talking to somebody from Portland. Lots of rain always in Portland. Very undesert-like. Jews are there. We're all over the place. Why is it called the desert? So we have to take a look at the common denominator between our galus among the nations. I once heard from Moshe Shapiro Zatzal, he said, we truly have been scattered to all corners of the earth. He said he has met in his lifetime a Jew who lived in Tierra del Fuego, which I think is kind of the southernmost habitable part of the world, and a Jew from Alaska, right, up in the northern part. We're everywhere. So what is the common denominator between the Midbar that Bnei Yisrael went to, between that desert, and between the Jewish people being scattered, oftentimes in very nice suburban houses, among different nations around the world? The Rambam, we saw last night in that Mar Nevuchim, Rabbeinu Bechaye, say that the Torah is emphasizing here these 42 travels because it was miraculous. A desert is not a place you live. A desert is a place you die. The Rambam even says that they delineated names of places just so a person in future history shouldn't look back at this and says, they were probably like in a bit of the desert-like zone just outside of cities or something, and they could always hop into 7-Eleven for a Slurpee and then go back to the Machne, to Moshe Rabbeinu. They weren't. They were in places where, without the miraculous Mon and Anani Kavod and everything that was happening, they would have died. Men, women, children, old, young, survived out there and survived well. It shows the tremendous love HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. But that love was expressed in the fact that they were in a situation that was untenable. The Midbar Ha'amim are being spread among the nations also by all rights and purposes should have decimated us long ago. Not even talking about the physical attempts to destroy us, which was done by the millions, but the spiritual difficulties, whether full-on onslaughts, whether the embracing hug of assimilation, we should not be here. We should have disappeared. The Midbar Ha'amim is not livable for the Jewish people. And yet here we are. Rabbi Yaakov Emden, kind of dealing, he didn't phrase it this way, with the question of, why doesn't God do miracles nowadays? Right? We often think if we just do one good big miracle, you know, one good, you know, wham, we'd all be so good. You know, then we'd be able to handle everything. We'd have it. He says, Chei Nafshi, says, by my life, very powerful phrase, he says, the fact that the Jewish people have been existing as one lamb among 70 wolves, existing not just physically, but existing spiritually, not just surviving, but thriving, and keeping and learning and growing that same Torah that we received from them, he said, Chei Nafshi, by my life, that is a greater miracle than all the miracles of coming out of Egypt and than all the miracles of the Midbar. And that miracle still goes on. It just gets bigger every year as it goes. So that, on one hand, is what we're celebrating. But on the other hand, it's very difficult. And why did Hashem put us into something so difficult? Rav Chaim Friedlander, in his writings about Tisha B'Av, about the Churban, kind of refers to a question that maybe we have some time in our gut. We'll say, okay, the Jews were living in Israel in a Jewish society. They had a Beis HaMikdash, they had a Sanhedrin, they had yeshivas, they had all these things, but we didn't behave properly. So Hashem says, okay, so I'm going to throw you out around the world to live among all sorts of non-Jews. So if we were like chutzpah dika teenagers, we would go like, so what's that going to help? And how's that going to make us any better? If in Israel, with all of our infrastructure, we were doing bad, how's taking it all away going to help us? So obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being the doctor, so to speak, of body and spirit of Am Yisrael, knows exactly what we need and what surgery, so to speak, was necessary. When you look at the Lashonus of the Medrash, when the Medrash talks about what's going on here as we list the travels of Bnei Yisrael, so they bring a mashal of a king who was traveling with his son. The Medrash Tanchuma that Rashi brings down, it's a mashal for a king whose son was sick, and he took him to a place far away in order to heal him. And as they went back home, he started replaying the different events that were there. Do you remember, right, here we slept, here you got a chill, here you had a headache, and they're going over that history. The Medrash Rabbah phrases it somewhat differently. Same scenario, king taking his son to heal him. On the way back, he's saying, right, these are all the places shehichisuni, that you got me angry. These are all the places where these things that happened to you were because you got me angry. And if you go through what Chazal say about many of these trips, and some of the trips even went backwards, we see that these remind us of times of things that Bnei Yisrael did wrong. I heard the story of two of the great rebbes in Poland approaching Sefer Bamidbar, and one of them gave what you call a krechts. That's kind of the old Jewish man sigh that comes like from the knees and goes all the way up. Oh, he said, what's wrong? He says, oh, when we get to these parshas, it's full of the sins of Bnei Yisrael. So the other one told him, but those sins became Torah. Right? Those sins turned into Torah. Right? And that is the power of Bnei Yisrael in their travels, in their power of tshuva. So here also, it shows why remember the fact, Yichisuni, you got me angry, you angered me, you behaved as you shouldn't, because it shows the ongoing tipul, the ongoing care of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Bnei Yisrael, even in the times when we were wrong, even in the times when we messed up, even in the midst of the fact that the entire frame of the journey was to try to heal you, while you're taking me to heal me, I also messed up and you still took care of me. So we can see here that it's a mix of all these things. The incredible love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on one hand, the fact that it's not punitive torture to make them go from place to place in the Midbar, but it was part of a healing process, and that what was going on there was, even if within that process we didn't behave as we should, HaKadosh Baruch Hu continued the process and continued to heal us and to try to heal us. And the Sfas writes, he says, we have to learn from this the following. He said, Nichtavu kol ha-masos, these travels were written, lodia la'am Hashem, to let the people of Hashem know, that's us, to let them know, ki kol oved Hashem lo yipol libo alav mikol ha-nafila sheyeshla. You're going to fall. You're going to mess up. Don't get depressed. Right? If people heard Dr. Chorsky yesterday, such a big key, right? Don't fall into sadness. Don't fall into despair. Ki kachi hamido lios olav yored. This is the way of things, the measure of life. You will go up and you will go down. V'chol menucha shehisigu acharei ze milchama. And the Jews were battling in the Midbar. It was a process and there were challenges. And sometimes they reached menucha because they were successful in their battle. But as soon as they were successful, itchil milchama acheres, another battle started. And you have to know that that is a process that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you in order for you to become who you're supposed to become. He says, don't get exhausted and don't think that it means that Hashem hates you. That just when you finally got someplace and you finally think you succeeded, something happens that now shakes it up. Something happens that now makes it more difficult. Something that you got set up fell apart. You were doing fine and suddenly a challenge comes out of nowhere. Why would Hashem challenge me? I'm with the program. I'm doing okay because you have to grow and you have to move, and it's a process that's getting you to where you're supposed to be. The Baal Shem Tov, the fascinating thing is brought in the Sefer Baal Shem Tov Ala Torah. There's a phrase in Chazal which is used for many relationships, which is called Yamin Mekarebes, the right hand drawing close, the small docha, the left hand pushing away. The right hand is the stronger hand in most cases, right? When we talk about it, the left hand is the weaker hand. Baal Shem Tov says, when does a Jew feel the Yamin Mekareves of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When do you feel that embracing hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He says, if you make a bracha and you actually are able to feel what you say. Do you realize how insane it is that if I shuffle out in the morning, half awake, and make my way to the coffee, right, and dump it into the cup. Sometimes I'm too tired to even use hot water. I just stick it in the tap, right? And I say, Baruch Atah Hashem, right? Shakol Nirvivaro. I'm saying Hashem, Shem Hashem, Atah, which is a very close personal way of speaking. I'm talking to Hashem. There, in my slippers, right, making my coffee. I am talking to Hashem. He said, if you were able to feel what that is, if you were able to feel, right, that idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, is so close, I'm able to speak with Him. Hashem, Yudke Vovke, the one who was, is, will be, the infinite, like Chomsky said yesterday, we have no way of even thinking about the infinite, but I talk, and He listens. And I'm acknowledging that He gave me my cup of coffee. If you could really sense that, then you're sensing the embracing right arm of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When do we feel the left hand pushing us away? That common supernatural scenario that happens when we actually rally our forces to try to have kavanah davening Shemoneh Esrei. Right? You got to shul on time. You say, okay, today's really important. I really have a lot to daven for. And this time, I'm going to try to pay attention in Shemoneh Esrei. Right? You know, you do Baruch Atah. Oh, my back hurts. I didn't get to have a massage yesterday from Gedalia. I wonder when the next one's going to be. Right? I wonder if I can talk to Michael Cohen about that now. Right? Or maybe there's something else I should take. I should ask somebody who knows. Maybe there's something you can get in the drugstore. Where's the closest drugstore anyway? Right? And then suddenly, right, as the Chofetz Chaim says, you find yourself going like this. Say, wait a second, why am I like this? Oh, it's modim. Right? It's like, you know, so suddenly, right, you're there. It's supernatural. Right? Other times you can kind of hold the thought. In Shemoneh Esrei, is there. The world says somewhat cynically that a person should say Tefillah Saderech before Shemoneh Esrei and should bench Gomel afterwards, because in between you're like flying all over the world. All it takes is that to get it going. And he says, it's true. It is supernatural. It's just not a normal thought pattern. It's a bit of pushback. It's true. He says, but if you feel that and you're feeling rejected, remember two things. That when someone's pushing you, they're very close to you. And they're touching you, and they care about you. He says, that's what's there in the small docha, in that left hand that pushes. So therefore, this is what the Svasemis is saying. You're going to go through those journeys, and they're going to be difficult. There's going to be pushback, and you're going to fall. But realize that that pushing that makes you fall is there to wake you up to something by someone that cares about you and is close to you. What is that pushback like? It has a fascinating deal. The special tefillah B'nai Yisrael would say when they would travel in the Midbar is told to us in Parshas Baaloscha. Vayhi b'nisa Aaron vayomer Moshe, kumo Hashem v'yafutzu oyvecha, v'yanusu misanecha miponecha. That those who make you hated, that last phrase, misanecha, grammatically, you're addressing Hashem, those who make you hated should run away. What does that mean? The forces that make us hate Avodas Hashem. This is the terms of that struggle. That's that pushback which is there. There are so many things that can happen that can make you hate Judaism, hate your life as a Jew, hate Torah. That's the struggle. That's the battle as you go through the Midbar Ha'amin. And generation to generation has taken so many different forms. Whether it's because they're physically oppressing you and a person thinks, if I wasn't Jewish, I wouldn't have this. Or whether it's because, right, they're beckoning to you with all sorts of goodies they want to give you if only you'll abandon your Judaism. You say, if I could only unload this Judaism, everything would be so good. And it takes different forms in different places. Suddenly you're in the Midbar Ha'amim and you see things through the eyes of the nation around you. Like the Rambam says in Hilchos Deos, the Rabbi Chorsky quoted, the earlier Rabbi Chorsky this week, right, that a person is influenced by the society that he's around. And it gets to the point that when the people around you see something as beautiful, you start to see it as beautiful. Fascinating example of that, the world of fashion. Ever try to figure out how the world of fashion works? It's mysterious, right? The common scenario is kids are looking through their parents' pictures albums. Something to do on a rainy day. They're looking through their parents' pictures albums and they're laughing their heads off. Why are they laughing their heads off? I can't believe you wore those things, right? Whatever it is. You know, you're looking at parents from the 1970s, they have their polyester leisure suits, they have their big glasses, they have their different things, you know, the bell bottoms, all this kind of stuff, and they're laughing away. But when those people, your parents, bought those clothes, they looked good. They looked good. They went to the store, they tried them on in the mirror, and they said, groovy, that looks really cool, right? I'm going to get that stuff. And it looked good. And now the same person looking at those same clothes thinks they're ugly and wouldn't be caught dead in them, right? And those same children, their children are going to laugh at them in their pictures because the things that they bought. It's an amazing thing, because once the style shifts and this kind of climate is in the world, this is now nice looking and this is now weird or ugly. We feel it. We see it. So misan echa, the way the world looks at Judaism, if we are caught up in the midbar ha'amin, we can end up seeing things through their eyes. And that is one of these great challenges which is there. The response that we have to be able to fight against that resistance, to be able to love Yadus, Judaism, Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is how we draw even closer than just Hashem drawing us close. And if a person like the Baal Shem Tov says is wise, he understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is thinking of you as he puts you in those challenges. It's that left hand which is there very close. I saw a story recently about the last tish of the Imri Emes in Poland. Poland, the Ger Rebbe, the Imri Emes, the last tish he held before he made his escape from Poland, the Nazis had a manhunt after him. And there were a row of Hasidim in front of him at the tish, and he gave shirayim, little bits of his food, to one Hasid, second Hasid, third Hasid, and one man he skipped over, and he gave to everyone else. So at the end of the tish, everyone scattered, and that man who did not receive the shirayim was kind of standing there, down. So it was a great chassid, Reb Gudel Eisner, his name was. He survived the war. He came, he was a mashgiach of the Ger Yeshiva in Tel Aviv. He came over to the man, he says, what are you down for? He says, yes, shirayim, no shirayim. The Rebbe was thinking about you. He was thinking about you. He was thinking, I'm not going to give to him, but he was thinking about you. Right? It wasn't ignored. Interestingly, that man said, out of that whole group, those who received the shirayim and he who didn't, he was the only one who survived the war. What connection, what meaning, what something, I don't know. But he was thinking, and he was giving him, or rather not giving him, that which was right for him at that point. So we have to understand that the love that's there behind the left hand pushing is the same love that's there for the right hand embracing. So as we continue this journey through the Midbar Ha'amim, through that world that we're in that makes it so difficult sometimes to love what we're doing, to love who we are, we have to understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a cheshbon in that, not just for us ourselves, but for all the people who are around, all the people that we're going to get in contact with. In certain ways, the Lechatchila plan, plan A, for how we would influence the world, is meant to be modeled after Shlomo HaMelech and Malkat Shva, the Queen of Sheba. Right? This I heard from Rosh Yeshiva once. He said, we don't have to go out doing PR if we would really be who we're supposed to be. And we would set up and live our lives according to the Torah as we're supposed to, the nations would come to us to try to learn and to find and to see where's this all coming from. That would be plan A. Plan B has to do with us being scattered around the world. We're meant to connect with, again, in the mystical Svarim, it talks about nitzotzos, sparks of holiness that are scattered all over the world. It certainly comes to those Jews who are scattered now from Tierra del Fuego to Alaska. And even into the eyes of the non-Jewish world, those travels that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us, that is the way in which we are supposed to be very impressive people. Each individual person, whether on a business trip, whether waiting for a bus, or a plane, or in a hospital, or in a museum, wherever you are, that is part of the scattering which is there. That is part of that journey. And that can help a person embrace a little bit things that happen in life that aren't necessarily the way you want them to. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in this sefer they brought out his things on Parshas HaShavua, brings a fascinating story this week. In Parshas Maaseh, he's talking about something a little bit later in the Parsha, the Ori Mikla, the cities of refuge for someone who killed B'shogeg, a person who killed not mazid, not intentionally, but with negligence. So he goes to a city of refuge, where he is then safe from one who wants to avenge the blood of the one who was killed. So the Gemara tells us, right, in Mishnah even, that they would set up signs in Eretz Yisrael that had the word miklat on it, so that when you're running, right, you know where the city of refuge is, so you should be able to get there quickly. I actually heard about a tourist who was here when there were sirens going off because of possible bombs, and he didn't know the nekudot, so he kept asking people, "Where's the makolet?" And they said, "Now's not the time to buy milk." You know, the same letters. Okay, miklat and makolet. You can figure it out later. So he said like this: the Ponim B'Shirov of Yosef Shom Kahaneman was a great Rosh Yeshiva in Lithuania. He escaped again miraculously through the fingers of the Nazis. His town, his yeshiva, was destroyed. And he came to Eretz Yisrael on fire to build, to an extent that people really thought he was insane. I spoke to people who remember him from that time, because nobody was interested in going to yeshiva almost at that time. The Nazis were marching towards Israel, right? There was World War II. There were all these things. And he was talking about, "I am going to build a yeshiva, a great yeshiva. Havdil," it sounded like Trump's wall. You know, it's going to be a massive yeshiva with hundreds of students. Best yeshiva ever, right? A huge library, right? All these things on a great mountain. He did not say who would pay for it, right? It was going to be Jews. That was his plan. Okay, would pay for it. But this incredible yeshiva that was going to be built. And someone told me, he said he was in a shul once where Rav Kahneman walked in, asked to speak between Minchin. They let him have his say, and as he walked out, people went like this. They felt that because of what he went through in the war, he lost it, and he was fantasizing. So he built it, but he really had to put his heart and soul into fundraising, to the extent that it took a toll, he felt, on the Torah he was able to learn. Again, they say when he would return from a trip, he would immediately get the Talmidim together and say a shir, a very brilliant shir. But it took a toll, so once he asked the Chazon Ish, he said, "Why should it be? I'm building a yeshiva. I'm building a yeshiva, and that's obviously something HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. And I not only have to travel to so many places to get the money, when I go there, the donations I get are puny. And I have to string together donation after donation after donation." Right? He was famous. As they said, someone asked once, I think it was the Satmarov, "Is there life on Mars?" He says, "I'm sure there isn't." They said, "Why not?" He says, "If there was, the Ponovizhirov would have made a parlor meeting there for his yeshiva." Right? So that he would go anywhere. He would try to get everywhere. So the Chazon Ish told him like this. He says, "Why is it they put up signs guiding Jews to the Ir Miklat in the case that somebody killed through negligence? Hopefully there's just a few such people. But every year, three times a year, the Jewish people had to go up on Aliyah L'Regel, and they had to know how to get there. Why do we not find a halacha that you should put up signs that say Yerushalayim with an arrow all over?" He says, "Because the following." He says, "We don't want someone who killed going around asking people, 'Excuse me, do you know where the Ir Miklat is? Is that the second turn? Sorry, I'm on my way to the Ir Miklat.'" Because that creates a buzz that somebody killed someone. And that makes people less sensitive to the value of human life. We don't want that going around so much. So we'd rather put up a sign and let him run silently to the Ir Miklat. But when it comes to making Aliyah L'Regel Yerushalayim, we want the whole country to be a buzz. Sorry, where do I turn for Yerushalayim? Where's next for Yerushalayim? Right? All these things everybody's talking about going up on Aliyah L'Regel. He says, so too. He says, "You're right. Universities, museums get ridiculous amounts of money. People just plop it on them in their will. $50 million, $100 million. Rav Moshe Shapira Zatzal said once, explaining in Yaakov Avinu's battle with the Malach, with that angel, so it says, "Vayiga b'kaf yerecho," right? He struck that sciatic nerve, And Yaakov Avinu limped. So he said, the Zohar HaKadosh says, what was affected spiritually in that struggle? Tamchin de'oraisa, the support of Torah. He said, from that time on, Torah limps financially. And you can almost follow, he says, something's financial success is inversely proportional to its spiritual significance. So I thought of that when I was in Philadelphia earlier this year. I saw this huge thing called the Jewish Museum, right? Big, huge building with names of all sorts of people on there. And the exhibit was Jews of Hollywood, right? This thing was worth millions upon millions and millions for Jews of Hollywood. And I don't think they had to go knocking on doors, coming into people's houses, you know, showing a little letter. Excuse me, I'm building a Jewish museum. We'd like to do an exhibit for museums of Hollywood. And you get like $2. Thank you very much. To scale the museums or whatever you say. Right? And they don't have to do that, right? People just decide, what am I going to do with that $20 million I made this year over the $100 million I have? I know, I'll give it to the Jewish museum. He says, how come that doesn't happen to me? He said, the Chazon Ish, he says, because you are creating the buzz of Torah around the world. As you raise dollar after dollar after dollar, you're telling people, there's a new yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. There are people that want to learn in the yeshiva. We need beds. We need chairs. We need food. We need svarim. Things are cooking. Things are growing. He says, you're like those people going to Yerushalayim. So this is how we have to see the journeys. So it's time to start thinking right now about our own private journeys. When it comes to Ben Azmanim, right, when it comes to the break time in yeshiva between the summer zman and between the Elul zman. So again, some people are bummed out, right? They say, I don't want a break, I want to keep learning, right? And then you have to sometimes go someplace. Other people say, I really want to have a break. Other people use it as a time to visit family, to do other things. So this is all part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's guiding you through the Midbar HaAmim, whichever way it is. And to realize that you're goal is to create that positive buzz. To create that positive buzz, that Kiddush Hashem, right, that'll be there, that when people see you and sense you, number one, that you're not a person who was affected by Mesanecha. You're not that person who's doing it but hates it. But you're able to express the love and the simcha and the privilege of what you have, and that is greater than any pep talks or any other material would give a person in getting them interested in the world of Torah. And you let the world know what's happening. You let the world know what's happening. I'm a successful guy. I had the world in front of me. I took off time to learn in yeshiva. What's that? What's that? Are there other people like you that do that? You betcha. It's happening. Right? There are people all over. And you know, even somebody like you at your age can take off time to learn Torah. And it goes, and it starts, and it is happening, and it is growing. And if Rabbi Yaakov Emden were able to see this, he would say an even bigger chei nafshi than he did before. Have a good afternoon.